All right. Well, our second sermon in the series on Christian homes. Last week, we looked at the concept of Christian single people, and we're moving towards starting a family in our series. So in our culture, at least, between being single and being married is very often the step that we call dating. So I've passed out some cards. I may have missed somebody, and there's more in the back. There's two ideas for those this morning, and maybe a third one. A third idea would be, forget about it, you don't need it. But if you would like to suggest some feedback for next week's lesson, think along the lines of what you would say to someone who is thinking about getting married or a newlywed couple or something like that. So if you have some, you've probably seen that at weddings or different receptions or something where the people who are invited will write a little card or something sharing some thought or a verse or experience or some advice to someone who is thinking about marriage. So if that's where you are in life and you have some of that to share, feel free to put that in the little box on the table back there as we did last week, and I'll be collecting those. On the other hand, for those of you who are not married, and if that's something that you are considering, and that's something that you would be open to in the future, in today's lesson, which is on dating, you might see some things that you'd want to write down and take notes on. So I've collected some feedback from people from last week, and I'll be sharing that with you near the end of the lesson. So there might be some good things to take note of. And if you don't have that, if you don't get it all down, I'll be glad to make copies or share it with you afterwards. So this topic of dating presents some challenges as far as the Bible study goes, because our practices and customs are so different from anything that you see in the Bible. I can't really find anything anywhere in the Bible that's comparable to the practice that we call dating for the most part. And so their world is different than our world, and that really shouldn't surprise us very much, because even what we call dating changes all the time. For those of you who are like me and kind of old, it would be probably a completely foreign world today if you were like in that world. I was reading articles on it in the digital age. There's articles for texting rules for people who are dating, social media rules for people who are dating, and to understand the etiquette and what's expected. One website said this lady was sort of one of those people that writes advice on romance and all that. And she said probably at the top of the list of questions people ask her are etiquette questions about texting someone that you're interested in, or, you know, how quickly should you write back, or what kind of things should you text, and all the, and then most of us never even experienced that in the context of dating. I'm so old that when Sarah wanted to reach out to me, she sent me an email, which I know for young people today, you couldn't imagine, I'm sure, sending, right, Cole? You would never think of if there was somebody you wanted to contact. What's her email? Just send her email. That's old, but to a lot of you, you think of email. There was no email around when I was dating. And in fact, there wasn't any email when I was in high school. That had started pretty much, came of age through that transition from writing it and folding it up to typing it in the computer and clicking send. So anyway, the point is that it's changing all the time. And if you were to travel around the world even today, I'm sure you'd find different cultures have different customs of what's expected and what's acceptable and what's, how people interact. And so it shouldn't surprise us that if you went back in time, it would change. In fact, even here, I'll tell you a practice that you won't believe, but you can read about it. Did you ever heard of the old, old, old custom of bundling? Does anybody know what that is? I see a couple of nods. In America and in England in the 1800s, 1700s, before the 1800s, in the 1700s. So we're talking about colonial days, really at the dawn of our country's history. There was this practice of if a young man and young woman were courting, and he traveled a lot of times a good ways to go see her, it would be convenient that he would spend the night at her place. Well, what they would do was the family of the young lady, they would both be fully clothed and bundled up in separate bedding and laid in the same bed together, very often with a bundling board between them, and then they would spend the night that way, and they could talk all night long. Now, some puritanical preachers would rail against this, and there's some, it kind of died out pretty quickly. Some people attributed it to the rise in premarital pregnancies in the 1800s. So you can sort of see how, despite the idea there's a flaw sort of in that concept. That's kind of surprising, isn't it? Then 1700s in England and America, that was considered acceptable. But that just shows you how weird, I mean, nobody would even dream of that today. Now when we look at the Bible practices, we find some pretty strange things too. In fact, that, remember what Naomi told Ruth in by way of dating advice? Pretty weird. We wouldn't do that today. But let's look at a couple of examples from Genesis. Look at Genesis chapter 24. In Genesis 24, Abraham sends his servant back to find a wife for Isaac, his son. He's gone. He's found a wife. He's brought her back. And you remember how quickly this goes down? It's really probably one of the shortest courting periods that you'll read about. Verse 64, beginning of chapter 24, 64. Rebekah lifted up her eyes when she saw Isaac. She dismounted from the camel and said to the servant, "Who is that man walking in the field to meet us?" The servant said, "It's my master." She took her veil and covered herself. The servant told Isaac all that he had done. Isaac brought her into the tent of Sarah, his mother, and took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her. That's that. This would be what we would call an arranged marriage, and they were very common around the world, and probably in some places very similar things still exist, where the parents of the prospective people select in some way the spouse, and there really is no dating per se. There's no courting. It's just, today's the day, and this is your wife, and that's it. So this is probably the shortest courting on record. Now, we don't have to go very far to find probably one of the longest. His son, Jacob, went back to the homeland to find a wife, and you remember he met Rachel. Now, this is really strange the way this one went down. Look at chapter 29. Jacob goes back to the homeland to find a wife of his own people. He finally gets where he's going. He arrives at his destination. There's a well. Young woman comes up to the well. He figures out that this is one of his people. Verse 11, then Jacob kissed Rachel and wept aloud. And Jacob told Rachel he was her father's kinsman, that he was Rebekah's son, and she ran and told her father. Now, if you'll notice, the sequence of events there is a little different than what we would normally see in our time. He kissed her right off the bat and cried and then introduced himself. I don't recommend that, by the way, guys. That's probably not going to turn out as well for you as it did for Jacob if you were to try that today. But when she goes back home and says, "Hey, you know, basically our cousin's here, and he wants to marry me," this is all good and it's all fine in their time. And but he had to wait a little while. Look at verse 20 of chapter 29. Jacob served 7 years for Rachel. This was sort of his dowry, his paying for her, and they seemed to be, or bride price, I think is what it's called. They seemed to be to him but a few days because of the love he had for her. Now, there's something probably we can detect as timeless, and that is a very romantic story in a way. Those 7 years passed like a few days because of his love for her. What a wonderful statement that is. But he had to wait. He had to wait 7 years. So if we would say Isaac perhaps courted Rebekah for 7 minutes and Jacob courted Rachel for 7 years, probably 99% of the rest of everybody falls somewhere between there. Would you agree? We dated probably longer than Isaac and Rebekah and less than Jacob and Rachel. So 7 years is very, very long, and Isaac and Rebekah, almost no dating. But it just shows that if you were to scan through the Bible and look at how people went from being single to being married, there is no consistent pattern that you can find. There's no prescribed way of going about it. There's no passages that detail how this was to be done. And so it seems like what we call dating today is something that is very cultural driven, very much just the norms and practices and traditions of our society. And therefore, it's a challenge to find direct passages that address it. So what we have to do is look for principles that guide us in that part of our life. And there are several principles that we will consider. Even though our practices are very different from Bible times, there's principles that are timeless, especially Christian principles that we can find and look at. First of all, though, I want to think about the concept of dating, and really, some people are even kind of, the more they think about it, you know, this isn't really a biblical idea, what we think of as dating. And even when you say dating, what do you mean by that? It's so broad that, even people in very young grades will say that they're going out before they can go anywhere. What do they mean by going out? They mean they're talking at school or something. They're not going. They can't go. They're years away from having their license, but they have someone they're going out with, which I always thought meant you would like go and go somewhere, but that's just the terminology. It changes all the time. You remember going steady? That's like a long time ago. There's all these phrases that they, what do they mean though? What does dating even mean? It depends on kind of who you ask and what they mean by that. But let's think about what's, when we think of dating today and how, and whether it's a good thing or a bad thing and how we should or shouldn't participate. One of the purposes of dating that it seems to me early on in the early years is just simply socializing. If you think about let's think about somebody that's in high school, for instance, and there's a ball game down the road or something, and so you call up somebody and say, would you like to go to the game together? Maybe that's a date. Or go and you stop and get, you know, some Sonic on the way or something, and that's, you know, you're just hanging out. Is it okay for young people to hang out with each other? I think that it is. I don't see anything in the scriptures that would say young people should not just socialize in that way. In fact, there's not a lot of scriptures about it, but it's interesting that when Jesus was 12 and they were headed home, they lost him. Remember, his mom and dad didn't know where he was? For a little while, they weren't worried about him. Remember what they thought he must be doing? Verse 44 says, supposing him to be in the group, they went a day's journey. Then they began to search for him among their relatives and acquaintances. What does this mean? That as a 12-year-old, Jesus was, you know, it wasn't uncommon, it wasn't surprising that he wasn't right there under his, you know, his parents' arms, but he was out with his friends and family and with the group, and he was socializing. And so that's, and he wasn't, but that's what they thought he was doing. He was back at the temple, actually, having a theological discussion with the priests and the leaders. But it wouldn't have been uncommon. In other words, Jacob and Joseph weren't alarmed initially because they thought, well, Jesus is hanging out with his friends. And so as young people, hanging out with friends and doing things together is there's nothing necessarily wrong with that at all. As long as the activities that we're engaged in are wholesome, then hanging out and socializing, enjoying time with other young people is fine. Now, dating, at least in a kind of, you know, not serious phase would be part of, I would think we would just call it socializing. Now, as we get a little more serious as far as the intention of it, of course, dating in the final sense is the purpose is to find someone who will be your husband or wife. And that is a noble ambition. We're told that whoever finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. This is, you know, finding a wife, finding a husband is a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. And that's obviously something that is commended in the Bible. And in our world, dating is that means of finding a spouse. That's just, we don't have arranged marriages in America. So people go and they try to find a spouse. Sometimes it is, you've probably heard the jokes, but you know, like a young lady would perhaps go to a Christian university to get her MRS degree, they would say. People go places to find a spouse, and that's fine. There's no shame in it. There's nothing wrong with that. It's good to go. In fact, that's very similar in concept to what we see in Abraham and Jacob. And that is, remember what he said, you don't want to marry one of these girls. You go back home where our people are and you find somebody there because presumably they would share their values and faith and things like that. And so they went a long ways to go find a wife among a group of people that they had something in common with. And so this idea that young people go somewhere where there's other young people who share their values and faith and then in that mixture of people be looking for a spouse, that's a biblical concept, and we would today call that dating. Dating would be the process of finding a spouse in that setting. And in my opinion, dating is a flawed way of doing that. It's not the best way. It's just the way we're stuck with at our time. I think perhaps arranged marriages would be an even better concept. Look at how well dating works. People date for a long periods of time in the world, and yet marriages fail all the time. And more than half, I think, at least statistically, marriages fail. So it's, if in terms of helping people find their a good spouse, I don't know that dating is the best way, is the best, most effective way to do this. In fact, sometimes you see people that are dating and you think that that's a terrible person for this person to be with. Why are they drawn to that person? You know, so it's like the adults can sometimes see this. And in fact, some people are really good at the dating game. But does that mean they're going to be a good husband or father, or they're really good at the dating game, but they may not be wife material? And then there's other people who maybe stink at dating because they're, you know, it's awkward and they're shy or something. And so it just seems like dating is sort of a barrier between, you have to go through this to get to the marriage thing. And I've had friends that I thought, man, this guy would be like an awesome dad and husband. But he was just terrible at dating. And that, it seems like a shame, you know. But then there's other people that it seems like they could date anybody they wanted to, and you know they're going to be a loser of a spouse one day. And so it just seems to me that dating is a flawed thing. It's our culture's way of doing things, but it definitely is not foolproof by any means. It may be that these things we read about that we think are so outdated, such as, mom and dad having a hand in that, would be a little bit better. But there's nothing we can do about it. We're not going to change that, obviously, in our lifetime. It's like, I don't know of a way to. So we're stuck with dating. Now, another purpose of dating that I think is a little more fuzzy is this concept of boyfriend-girlfriend. This is where I'm not looking for a spouse, and I'm really looking for more than just socializing. I'm looking for someone to be mine, but this is a commitment that is not engagement, or the Bible word for engagement or close to it would be betrothal, which is a formal bond. It's almost as strong as marriage, what we would think of as being proposed to be married. But there's a lot of people today who go out or date or whatever you want to call it, and what they're looking for is this level of attachment and commitment. And this concept of having a boyfriend or girlfriend, I can't find anywhere in the scriptures as being something that, you know, was a recognized relationship status. So this is people that are boyfriend and girlfriend. The only time I could think of someone having a romantic relationship outside of marriage, I was trying to think of Bible examples, is Samson and Delilah. That's not a great, story to look at, but you find people being single, you find people having families, and you find people being engaged in, like Joseph and Mary were betrothed. You find people being married, but I can't think of any scriptures that talk about people having a boyfriend or a girlfriend, where you have a commitment to this person. And I think there's some dangers with that. Again, that's part of our world. It seems like it starts really young that people have I like you, I like you too. And that's, sweet and innocent. But there's some dangers with this. And so with that in mind, let's talk about what are some of the dangers, that can come from our culture and our practice of dating. Well, we'll group them into two different categories. And the first one, I don't know the best title for this, but some people, the world, often uses dating with an end in mind that is not moral. They may have a completely different objective in mind for dating than Christian young people. And Christian young people need to realize this because you may not know it. But there are people, and their concept of dating is to engage in the worldly lifestyle of fun and doing what is enjoyable and partying and all of the things that go along with that that are immoral. And that's their interest, and that's what they want to do. And this is nothing new. These are simply what we would call the sins of the flesh. The works of the flesh are evident: sexual immorality, impurity, sensuality. Notice this word sensuality. We'll come back to it in a little bit. passions. And so there's sexual immorality, and then sensuality would be things that just inflame the passions, just things to enjoy sensual behavior. And that's what the world's interested in. And this starts at an alarmingly young age as well. You know, we'd like to think maybe that's for older folks, but that's, it's startling to read about how young, you know, people are when they start hearing about and talking about, you know, at school and that, this kinds of things. This is the world. This is the world that we live in. Same world they lived in the first century. The Gentiles, what do they want to do? Living in sensuality, passion, drunkenness, orgies, drinking parties, lawless idolatry. This is the worldly partying lifestyle. And pretty much as soon as young people are, old enough to be able to find a way to engage in this, you find that that's becomes a big priority for them. And so kids at school have parties all the time. And then, their idea of dating somebody is finding someone to participate in these kinds of things with. And so young men and young ladies need to understand that, there are people out there, that's their intention. And they may seem super sweet, and they may seem very flattering and very nice and friendly, but really and truly their goal may be the thrill of engaging in these things, another experience with someone else, a conquest, a story to share with their friends. Basically, they're looking for someone to go have this kind of fun with. And we need to be aware of that. If you're not into that, you're going to be different in today's world. And that was true in Peter's world. In fact, the next verse says, with respect to this, they're surprised when you don't join them in all of that. And they malign you, which means they speak evil of you. So if you're a young man or a young lady and you're not thinking, you're not drawn to the partying world, or you want to, you know, you're interested in a girl, but you don't have any desire to engage in these kinds of sensuality, and you're saving all of that for marriage, you're going to be strange in today's world. You probably saw a story, or you may have seen it anyway, there was a story in the news the past week or two about Tim Tebow. Him and his girlfriend broke up, and there was a story about it. Of course, some of this stuff is all gossip and all that, so who knows if it's even true. But the rumor was that she dumped him because he's saving himself for marriage. And she didn't have any interest in that kind of relationship. She wasn't interested in dating Tim Tebow and it not going any further than gentlemanly, you know, above board kind of behavior. She was interested in sexual behavior, and he's not, and so she dumped him. That seems harsh and strange, but there's people that this is what's fun, and they're not interested in a relationship that isn't going in this direction. Someone who wants to wait till they're married some years from now, that's not even on their radar. What they're thinking about is this weekend or next weekend, or how many dates does it have to be, and, you know, how far they can go and those kinds of things. And so we just need to be aware that there are, in the world that we interact with and we live in, there's people that in their mind dating is going in a different direction than where Christians should be thinking. Now, what about for good kids? I think this is the danger that comes with people who have totally appropriate goals and who just enjoy one another's company, but fall in love, let's say, and get into a relationship where they're not in a situation or a time in their life or where they can get married. So they're just going to be in this relationship that's very, very close and long, but it isn't progressing toward marriage. It presents some challenges. It presents some temptations to us if we're in that kind of relationship. Turn with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 7. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. I don't think I have this one on the... Oh, I do. You can still turn there if you like. Paul's here is suggesting that there was, at the time when he wrote this, it would be better for everybody to hold tight and put off any plans for marriage. If you're single, stay single. But he warns, some people will struggle with this. He said, to the unmarried and widows, I say, it's good for them to remain single as I am. But if they cannot exercise self-control, they should marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion. This idea of burning with passion is being inflamed with desire. And so it can be a natural thing, I think is the right way to say that, for a young man, a young woman who are attracted to each other, who are in a relationship to have these feelings, that those feelings are put there by God. They're designed, you know, that's all part of the way that men and women are made. But Paul says some people aren't going to be able to control that. And if they can't, they need to go ahead and get married. Well, what if you're not in a position where you can get married? Then what's the other alternative? It would be to be out to end this relationship. Now, is that harsh? It might sound harsh. But what is the point of being in a relationship that as it's going along, you're just burning with passion? In other words, your passions are inflamed for one another, and you're wrestling and struggling with keeping that under control. If this goes on for a long period of time, can we all see where that's going to go? It's a very predictable outcome of that, and that is that that temptation will eventually get you. And so we need to be very careful about being in a relationship that is not moving toward marriage, that if that becomes one that is inflamed with passion, then it is something that needs to be avoided because it's going to get us into trouble. It does seem like not everybody struggles with that. That's what Paul seems to be saying here. Some people have a gift in the verse or two before this of self-control, and they don't, it isn't something that's a temptation. I mean, it's not like, I mean, they may feel the desire, but they don't struggle with it. Just like, you know, people struggle with different things. And so some people may be able to, you know, obviously it seems like Jacob and Rachel waited 7 years. That's amazing. You know, they passes a few days because of the love he had for her. Some people have those long relationships and live in an upright way. Then there's other people that really, really struggle with that. And I think that's what Paul is acknowledging here. And so we have to be very careful not to just stay in a relationship that is presenting temptation for us. Basically, as a Christian young person, our devotion to the Lord has to come before our relationships with anybody else on this world. And that's tough, but that's what we sign up for when we say, I'm going to be a Christian. Jesus comes first. So Paul writes to Timothy, flee youthful passions. This is a good verse. There's two key ones. So if you're a young person taking notes, write this one down. Flee youthful passions. There are some of these things that seem to be youthful. You know, that's like what young people do. Youthful passions. And instead, pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. That's a great marching orders for young people, isn't it? That here's what your goal should be. Another one, and I think this is the other key passage when it comes to dating. 1 Thessalonians 4:3-5. 1 Thessalonians 4:3-5. This is the will of God, your sanctification, that you abstain from sexual immorality, that each one of you know how to control his own body in holiness and honor, not in the passion of lust like Gentiles who do not know God. I remember being a certain age and thinking, this is all silliness. Why would anybody even want to do that? And if you're thinking that way, good, because that's a good time of your life. Then I remember when I understood it. And so it may be that you're hearing this and you're thinking, that all just sounds gross, and I don't even know why anybody would be tempted with that. And that's wonderful, and that's a sweet, innocent time of life. But then as you get older, it's usually these kind of temptations come alive at some point. And so you're going to have to learn self-control and discipline, and you're going to have to think about passages like this and what the Lord's will for you is, that you control your body in holiness and in honor. God, as I said, made us with these desires, but he gave us the rightful place for them. And it is in marriage, and that's where he wants those to be fulfilled. They're not bad, you know, things to feel. It's a good thing to feel, but it is something that's meant to be fulfilled within the context of a marriage. That's the way that God designed it. Now, someone along these lines, a lot of times people want to know, well, how far is too far and what's okay, and how do we, you know, what kind of boundaries do you set in these behaviors when you go from sexual immorality to sensuality, which is this inflaming of the passions? And I would suggest to you that you know, it's not easy necessarily to draw those lines. Probably, you could hug someone and that could become inappropriate. So, I mean, how are you going to draw those lines? I would suggest that this idea of sensuality is the key, and that is if the behavior that you're indulging in has the effect of inflaming your passions, then that's something that should be saved for marriage, because where is the inflaming of the passions going to lead to? What's the point of inflaming these things if they're not going to be followed through on? So if you just want to sort of work yourself up but not indulge or engage, you're setting yourself up for a very difficult struggle. So the whatever it is, if the behavior is wholesome and good and innocent and pure, that's fine. If it is something that is leading to lusting and passions and those kind of things, that needs to be saved for a time when you can follow through on that, which would be in the context of marriage. Now, perhaps more detailed talk would be appropriate in a class discussion kind of a setting or at home. Now, some advice. I did get some cards from people. I did get some feedback, and I appreciate that. I'm not going to go into detail on each of these things, but I want to share some advice from what was shared with me and then add one of my own at the end. Somebody's number one rule is stay away from the internet. Now, there's a lot of ways you could take that. There's a lot of dangers about the internet. Internet and dating, the internet's more and more involved in dating. Some people meet over the internet. I think that's fine to make connections. I mean, that's the way our world works. It's like talking on the phone when I was a kid. Some people meet through the internet. But there's a lot of dangers about the internet, especially when it comes to dating. There's things today where people text each other, and that quickly becomes part of this sensuality. Texting can be sensual. Texting can be inappropriate. There's apps and things where you share pictures and videos and things, and that can quickly go into inappropriate, immodest things. You should not be sharing something with someone through your device or tablet or phone that you wouldn't say in front of, you know, that you'd be ashamed or embarrassed if somehow somebody saw it, somebody else got it. Or if you break up with that person next month and then other people see what you said and what you sent, there shouldn't be any danger. There should be no fear in that, because everything should be above board. And that's, you know, those are sort of some rules that we ought to, consider for social media. Some other advice on some of the cards: be yourself. That can be a challenge as a when you're young, going through this stage in life. Be honest. Communicate. These are good Christian principles that we could find verses for to go with them. Be humble. That can be a good thing to remember as well. In this one, there was a little more to it than that, but I summarized it. Think of others. During this time of life when you're single, don't become self-absorbed, but be thoughtful and think about other people. Enjoy and make the most of that time of your life when you're single. Surround yourself with positive people. There's definitely a lot of different influences, and we choose a lot of that. And the people, they can pull you down or they can build you up, right? Don't let people pressure you. Don't give in to that. Uh-oh, I copied that one twice. This was a really good one as well. Two of them here, I think. Keys in Christian dating: hang out in public and hang out in groups. What would be the opposite of that? Going somewhere alone and in private. Alone and in private is dangerous for young people. So if you're off somewhere all by yourself and there's nobody around, it's just the two of you, there'll be temptations you would never face if you're with your friends in a public area. And so if this is dating that's just socializing, going to a basketball game where you're going to be with your friends, you're sitting there, going to occasions where you're with other people, going in groups of people where you can enjoy socializing, and that's a fun part of being young. And I think all that's fine. And so this is great advice for young Christian people dating, because it's hard to get in too much trouble unless you're in the wrong crowd. But if you're hanging out with friends who are good people and you're doing things together and you're doing things in a public sort of way, a lot of the temptations that are associated with dating will be, much less. The same card said pray for purity. And then, of course, involved in that, saving yourself for marriage. A lot of people, that card went on to say, our society has this idea that you need to try out marriage before you buy it, sort of. And that's the going thing today, that people even think it'd be, people today in our world would say it would be silly or foolish to get married before you've lived together. They would say, well, how do you know it's going to work? So they would say you should, you know, completely try out married life before you commit to it. And actually, from what I understand, I haven't read them, but studies have shown that's actually, you're less likely to have a happy marriage if you do that. I mean, it presents problems. It doesn't solve things. It creates problems. The Bible way, the way that's designed was you find someone, and you save those experiences and all those things for after your wedding, and you save yourself for marriage. Nobody, you're never going to regret that. Right now, if you're single, you don't have a spouse who has a claim on you, but they're probably, if you're going to get married, that young lady or that young man's out there somewhere. And one day you're going to meet them, and one day you're going to get married, and you're going to hope and wish that both of you have saved yourself for that special moment and that special person. So it's easy to forget about that. And when you're young, but think about that, that day is going to come. It may seem a long ways off, but it'll come. This is an important one. And several people gave me cards on choosing a spouse. I'm going to get more into that next week. Feel free to give me more input on that. But someone said to me a long time ago that you should date the kind of person you would want to marry. And the idea is eventually you'll marry somebody that you've dated, right? So if you date the kind of people that you wouldn't want to marry, what's an obvious danger with that? You might marry one of them. I mean, that's kind of where that goes. But also, if you're dating someone and you're spending lots of time talking and doing things, that person has a huge impact and influence on your life. And if they don't share your core values, the things that are the most important in your life, if they're not the most important in their life, then there's a very good chance that they're going to influence you in a negative way. Now, you could influence them in a positive way. Sometimes that works that way. And that's why I added this at the end. My own tip here is to invite your friends to come to church with you. Now, is the purpose of church to be a date? Probably not. That's not the purpose of coming together to worship. But I'll say this from my own experience. It's a great thing to do with someone that you like because there's a lot of good things that come from it. One, if the person hasn't been exposed to the way that, you know, you understand the Bible and the gospel and all that, it's a great way for them to come and hear preaching and all that kind of thing. It's about the most wholesome thing you could possibly do as far as that goes. And you learn a lot about that. It can be a conversation starter where you say, well, you know, what did you think? And there's all kinds of doors that could be open for talking about spiritual things. They see what's important to you. If they're there and they see you singing and worshiping and studying your Bible and in Bible class, they're saying, hey, this is what this person's all about. And it may be that if they have zero interest in that kind of thing, that this is a good way to find out. This is not really the kind of person that I'm interested in being attached to if they don't share my interest in spiritual things. And so I would suggest that's a good thing to do. And it wouldn't have to be necessarily church. It could be going to a singing somewhere or a meeting somewhere. Just spiritual things. Invite them to go to a Bible study that you're going to go to, or young people get together like we have sometimes. Bring them to those kind of things. And what you find out is if this person is interested or not. And that can be a wonderful thing. And a lot of people have been led to the Lord by people that they met in those kinds of circumstances. A lot of people, maybe some of you sitting here, have been led to the Lord in that very sort of way. And that's a good thing that we can do. But if the person is a worldly person who is not interested in spiritual things, you have to be very careful about the time that we would spend. Remember what Paul says, don't be deceived. Evil company corrupts good morals. Don't fool yourself and think that it won't affect you. Perhaps someone here who's not become a Christian, this lesson obviously hasn't been about that. But if you haven't ever put on Christ in baptism, that would be the first step to say, more than any other person, more than any other thing in this life, I want to be a Christian. I want to join myself to Jesus and follow Him and be one of His people. And of all the relationships you have, that is going to be the most important one. Because everything else in this life, every other person in your life can fail you, can let you down, and none of them have the power to save you, and none of them have the power to bring you home eternally. Only Jesus and only that relationship can do those things for you. And so if you haven't ever given your life to Him and you're ready, this would be a great time to do it. And if we can help you, let us know while we stand and sing.